Hello, and welcome to the show Gold Squadron Gaze. It's the podcast where two Star Wars-loving gays break down each episode of their favorite Star Wars TV shows, while also being gay as hell. I'm your host, Bradley Brower.
I'm your other host, Charles Rogers. Welcome to the podcast that has officially outlived Henry Kissinger, for whom I hope hell exists so he can be burning in it for all eternity. And speaking of things that are burning, we're going to be talking about Darth Vader today.
Okay.
I rehearsed that segue.
I bet you did. Because
for 10 minutes.
Oh my god.
I was ready to go. I was ready to go with somehow connecting Henry Kissinger burning in hell to what we're currently covering. Like, do you know how, like, a lot of news publications, like, they'll write obituaries for really old people, like, ahead of time? You know, they'll
right,
do
they
this.
Have packages ready to, like, hit right. Send when someone dies. Yeah.
Hit send immediately when someone dies.
Right.
I had various intro segues for Henry Kissinger dying, depending on what we were going to be covering. Anyway, speaking of people burning and being awful and dying and doing war crimes, we're going to keep doing Darth Vader today. If you're just joining us, first of all, the plot of this is going to be very confusing to you. You should probably go back and start with Darth Vader number one. But if you are just joining us, during the recent SAG-AFTRA strike, to stand in solidarity with the union, we opted not to cover any visual media, instead focusing on books and then trying our hand at comics by reading the 2017 Darth Vader run by Charles Soule, which we are now firmly in the climax of. Today we are going to be covering issues. I practiced this beforehand, so I know I'm not going to fuck this up. 22, 23, and 24. Did I get that right, Bradley?
You did get that right. Good job.
Thank you. Thank you. I take personal pride in getting things right. It does happen a lot. But, you know, sometimes it doesn't. That's why we have the Thing Charles Fucked Up segment. Anyway, credits for this series of issues. This one is Fortress Vader Parts 4, 5, and 6. This is a 7-part arc. We're covering all the way up to the final episode. There's a little too much in Darth Vader number 25 for us to cover here. So the credits are this one, these block of three issues, is written by Charles Soule, as they all are. Penciler was Giuseppe Camuncoli, as they all are. The inker for this one. So Danielle Orlandini was the inker for 22, 23, and 24. But Terry Pallett is also listed as the inker for issue 22. As far as the letterer goes, it's Joe Caramagna again. And as far as the colorist, issue number 22 is David Curiel. 23 and 24 is David Curiel and Dono Sanchez Almara. I do also want to mention, we're going to mention one of the cover artists here. I haven't really been mentioning to them because they haven't really been talking about the covers. But when we get to the first cover, I am going to be mentioning who did the cover for issue number 22, I think. So, this week on Darth Vader 2017, Darth Vader teams up with an ancient Sith Lord to constantly screw each other over and try to achieve their own ends. Bradley, what was one thing you liked about this block of the arc and one thing you did not?
Okay, so one thing I liked was I love that everything kind of essentially came together. We know who Momin is now. We get his backstory. We get his reasonings for doing things. Like, everything is pretty much there, I think, in this little block. Like, it pretty much does a really good job of explaining all of him and everything that he's about. And obviously the climax will be in 25. But yeah, he's a really interesting character. I love that they included this guy because he's just a freaky dude. And I don't know. I like him. I think he's just like a little elf boy that, like, you know, is just a fucking evil little demon twink, and he's great. I love it. And then
I can't get over the demon twink. Little elf demon twink.
Yeah, because he's got like pointy little ears and he's a little blonde twink. I mean, when he's like not super evil looking, I mean, he's like a little, you know, he's a little twink boy, I guess. So he's just a really cool character, a really complicated character too. And then what I didn't like, ooh, this is hard. I don't know. I don't really have something I didn't like. I'm trying to like scan through real quick to see if I really remember anything. But honestly, I thought it was pretty decent. Like, I don't think there's anything that I really was like truly was like, oh, I just would have changed that, or I didn't like that, or it bothered me. So far, I think it was all pretty good. I mean, like, I thought the pacing was really good with all these issues. I felt like there was a beginning, a middle, and end, really. So I don't have anything. I can't think of anything. I mean, maybe you'll remind me of something as we go, but
I doubt it, because I was real struggling with this one. I have like the nitpickiest of nitpicks. My thing I liked was I love the interplay between Moment and Vader. I think it's really interesting. We think so often about Sith characters as being very samey, that they're kind of iterations of the same character. They're all either Darth Vader lights or Palpatine lights or Asajj Ventress lights or Count Dooku lights or Darth Maul lights. They're trying to play into these characters that we know, even though Asajj Ventress is not a Sith. A lot of the Lady Sith are following her aesthetic, essentially. And I thought it was really interesting that Momen was kind of his own thing, and also that Momen is very obviously a product of a different time, and he's very obviously a product of a different era of the Sith, and his interplay with Vader is very much the clash of the past and the present. I thought that was really neat, and I thought all of their relationships were really, really dynamic and really interesting. And of course it went exactly where you think it's going to go, but right. Even just because a story is predictable doesn't mean it doesn't have inherent value. It's in the execution and it's in what the story is trying to say. So even though we know the butler did it, we guess the butler did it right at the beginning, that doesn't mean the story is not extremely excellent. Minor little nitpick, we kept flashing back to the Mustafarians, which I like, and I'm going to talk about how I like the Mustafarians. I do feel like four characters who were named and seemed to have relationships, I felt like they could have hit harder as a group. Like, we don't really spend that much time with them. We know the basics of what we need to know for why they are attacking and what happens, but I felt like we could have spent just a little more time with them, because if you remember last issue, I was like, oh sick, there's Mustafarians, and then we don't really get to see much about their culture. We don't really get to see much about, like, there's little allusions talking about like the firebugs and stuff, but it's not as strong as I felt like it could have been. That was my only real nitpick with these three issues.
Fair.
To be entirely honest,
it's not that much to pick from. I mean, it is slim pickings to be like, well, that was just okay, like, you know. So
I mean, the worst I can say about a thing in this comic is that it's okay.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing in this comic, unlike a certain book that I recently read that we're not going to talk about on the podcast because I am not a bad person who just bashes things he didn't like on air. But unlike that, there really is nothing in this arc that I can specifically point to, or really in this entire comic, that I can say this was really badly executed.
Right.
This was really badly handled. Alrighty. Issue number 22. Darth Vader has just fucking killed Rago and is levitating the mask of Momen. He then takes the mask to the creepy Sith cave and has a lovely little conversation with it. There is a long flashback where we find out Lord Momen was this fucking weird little dark side artist who's like creating these horrible pieces of art that got him imprisoned. He got rescued by a Sith lady. He got really mad at her for calling him an apprentice, and so he killed her. Then he tried to build a super weapon, and then he got stopped by the Jedi, and the weapon backfired on him and fried his ass, and all that was left was the mask, but he was in the mask. Somehow we move on. Momen almost convinces Vader to put the mask on, but Vader manages to reject it. Cut to some Mustafarians. They're like, we should investigate what's going on here. So some Mustafarians go to investigate. They see Vader. Vader captures one of them and like puts the mask of Momen on him. Then Momen and Vader have a conversation, and it's sort of revealed that this area being a force locus is kind of like a door to the dark side, and that Padme Amidala is apparently on the other side of this door. And if they can build the right fortress, they can get her back. Momen is 100% on board with this and is like, oh yeah, I can totally do this fortress for you. We could totally do this. End of issue. I want to talk about the cover. And yes. We've not really talked about the covers before, which is why I haven't been mentioning any of the cover artists. But this one was done by Giuseppe Camuncoli and Elia Bonetti. And yes. If you look at it, it's Vader doing the Alas, Poor Yorick.
Right, which we've seen hinted at earlier with Palpatine doing it.
Now they're just making the reference.
Right, now it's very explicit. Like,
even if you forgot the plot of Hamlet, you know the Alas, Poor Yorick bit. It's like the classic image of Shakespeare, of Hamlet standing there holding this skull. I love it. I love it. I had to shout that out because I was like, that is so cool. Anyway, so apparently Rago is in fact dead. I don't know how I missed that, but he's super dead. He's got a lightsaber slashed across him. I did kind of go into this being like, coming off of the last episode that we did, I was sort of like, oh, I wish that we'd, you know, gotten have the mask on Bren. It does become apparent in the next issue why that couldn't happen.
Right. I now that I know that, I take back that criticism slightly, only because it was never meant to be a long-term thing anyway. So
No. I like what ultimately ends up shaking up with the mask, like being able to possess different people and having be the same guy moment every time. So Rago's dead. RIP to that character. But we get a fantastic new character in the form of Lord Momen. And we get Momen's whole flashback, his whole life story, starting with him murdering cats as a child. Which,
if there's any indication that you are a psychopath, it's murdering small cats.
It's like the defining thing in media that's like, this character is going to be a fucking psychopath.
Right.
Is he murders cats, specifically a Rada cat, which we've never seen anywhere else. They never get mentioned again in all of Star Wars. But there is a Rada cat named Flitta, and Momen, as a child, murders the shit out of this cat. And does something grotesque with it. We don't really get to see what that is, nor do we really get to see the art that he makes later. And I actually really like that.
Right. It's so horrible that you can't really show it, kind of thing. Like, yeah.
There's a device in horror writing, and just horror in general, wherein what your viewer can conjure is actually probably far worse than anything you could come up with as a creative. So good horror, in a lot of ways, will leave these gaps. It'll leave these things unshown so that the viewer can imagine something infinitely worse than what you as the writer would have come up with. And I do love that. Momen waxes philosophical for a long time. Momen refuses to shut the fuck up. And he's talking about his philosophy on art. And as I was reading, particularly the bit where he's talking about, like, nobody wants to come to a piece of art and not feel something. And I am going to force them to feel fear and revulsion and horror because, you know, that's something. Momen's artistic sensibilities are rooted in an inherent selfishness. We can see the Sith philosophy already in him even before he becomes a Sith, because his entire... Bradley, I want to personally apologize to you. I am now going to go on a tangent about art philosophy.
Oh God, okay.
Because remember, we went to the same school.
Right.
We had to take art classes. My best friend is an artist. I have some thoughts on art. Art, media, etc. is in my mind, in a lot of ways, a conversation between the creative and the viewer. But in a lot of ways too, and this is where Death of the Author comes in, a work has to also stand on its own. So it's this complicated web of a careful balance between viewer, artist, and the work itself. These are the three things that form sort of the triumvirate of art. To me, Momen has his finger very firmly pushing down the himself side of the scale. Because if you read between the lines of what he's saying, he doesn't care about the viewer having their own unique experience. He doesn't care about what the art is trying to say. He cares about how he personally can make the viewer feel. It's removing the viewer and, in a lot of ways, the artistic piece itself, because we don't see it, and he doesn't have really any intentionality beyond, I want to make something shocking and horrible. There's no thought behind that beyond that. There's nothing he's trying to say beyond, you are capable of revulsion, which is not a very informed or clever thing to think, but he's so wrapped up in his own mentality about how, you know, he's gonna make something that people are talking about and people like think things about, and the thing is revulsion because I made them feel. It's very I made. So we already see the bones here of where, like, he's going to eventually become a Sith acolyte. I think that's very interesting, and probably me grossly overanalyzing these particular few panels.
I mean, not really though, because I mean, yeah, I mean, really, what he's little talk about what he's saying, I will show them the truth. truth kind of thing. Like, it's only one or two panels, but it says a lot right in that little bit.
Oh yeah. So I'm gonna revise the counter that we've sort of half borrowed from the divas. Ding on the "I really find this character interesting" counter, but also "I hope he fucking dies."
Ooh, a little reverse there.
Little reverse. I'm subverting their counter. No, speaking as an artist in my own way, I don't do visual art, but speaking as an artist, this type of guy is such a self-important dick that I would hate running into him at a party. I would find him fucking exhausting. I would find him super insufferable. Like, the type that's constantly talking about himself and about his vision and about how he's so clever and about how his thing is, like, so, so galaxy-brained. And I'm like, shut the fuck up. I'm so tired of this. That's my feeling on this guy.
Well, my notes literally say... I was going to say, you can't run into him at a party because they put him in fucking, like, a sane asylum or jail or something so that he's not
away. Let me ask you, because you work in a creative field and also, again, we went to the same school. Have you run into a person like this?
Oh, all the time.
All the time? Yeah.
Mostly directors, but yes.
In film, it does tend to be mostly directors.
Yeah, it's usually this is directors also, that do this.
It's also the directors, not to get really shitty for a minute, but I'm going to get really shitty for a minute. It's mostly the directors that also think they're writers. And then you read their script and it's fucking terrible. But they have this artistic vision of what they want this film to be. They're going to be the next Quentin Tarantino. And I'm like, you can't even legally drink yet. You're 19. Shut the fuck up. Well, that was the people that I ran into in college that were doing it. But there's people that still do it, you know, as adults. But yeah, it's exactly that type of person. Anyway, Momin gets imprisoned, correctly in my opinion, and he is busted out by Darth Shaw. There's your lady villain, Bradley.
I was gonna say, behind every psychopathic twink elf, there's a lady villain to support them.
I love this. I love this. Charles Soule knew exactly what we wanted.
Right.
He said, you want Inquisitors, you want demon twink, and you want some lady villain who's only going to be in it for like 5 minutes.
Right. Which is a shame because I kind of like her, like, design.
Oh, I love her design. And this is an interesting thing that they kind of do in the comics. But the books have also sort of done this with Shadow of the Sith. Star Wars as a franchise right now is really avoiding making the mistake that Knights of the Old Republic did. Hold up. Before you come into my DMs to yell at me for saying Knights of the Old Republic made a mistake, hold on. See where this is going. Knights of the Old Republic, being as good as it was, did establish certain commonalities between that era, the Old Republic era, and the era of the films, the prequels and the original trilogy. And for a long time, we ended up sort of stuck in that because every era was going to have Jedi, every era was going to have Sith. They were going to be basically the same right up until we got to Darth Bane. Everything was status quo because also everything had to feel like Star Wars superficially. There had to be a Republic. The Republic had to operate basically the same way. We can't fix anything in the Republic because it doesn't fall until the Clone Wars. What the comics are doing that I find really interesting, and also some of the books, is that they're seeding these random bits of history. So Dr. Aphra's doing this. Charles Soule does this. Kevin Scott's really good at this. He will drop a name and then never explain it. And the idea is they keep moving further back and further back in their storytelling, or they start with the new Dawn of the Jedi movie and they start moving forward. There are now these building blocks. Charles Soule actually established that, like, the Jedi haven't always been the organization they are by the time of the High Republic, that they've gone through different phases. So now he's set up for future storytellers that they could work with any of these different eras of the Jedi. They can get creative with it. They don't have to do the prequels Jedi, but 2000 years before. And Darth Shaw is one of those characters that I feel like we could do so much with her.
Yeah, like they only introduce her. They don't give her backstory. They just say she's just evil Sith lady. That's it. And it's just, that's great. Because then you don't know anything else. It's so open-ended that they could literally do a novel. They can do a movie. They can do a TV show, whatever you want to fucking do, and be like, oh, this is just her end. Like, this is just how she dies, you know, and that's pretty much it. Like, you can kind of go from there and fill in the gaps, I guess.
Yes. Now, unlike some of the other people that we have discussed, she has actually been mentioned in other things since then. She is mentioned in Hidden Empire number 2, also by Charles Soule. This is part of the overarching Crimson Dawn story. And also Also, she got a mention in Shadow of the Sith by Adam Christopher. So she has been mentioned a few other times. She's not just here. Anyway, Momin goes on like this continuing escalation of narcissism and villain pride and is like, oh no, actually, like, I understood that the audience wasn't the people. The audience was only the Force, and I had to impress the Force. I was making things for the Force. Shut the fuck up. I just want to punch this guy in the face. He's so insufferable. Oh, the Force was paying special attention to me and gave me visions for my fucking super weapon to murder a bunch of people and capture the essence of their panic. I hate this man. As a person, I love him as a character. I hate this man.
Yeah, he's just kind of not monologuing, but he's essentially he is because, well, when he's showing Vader all the flashbacks, he's like, look at how accomplished I was. Like, I did all this research and then, but he builds like some super weapon, of course.
He builds some fucking super weapon because this is Star Wars.
Because this is Star Wars. And of course, that's his greatest work of art is a giant super weapon.
Well, his work of art is going to be the like moment of panic he's going to capture in time.
Right.
But then he was like, oh, the Jedi ruined everything. I'm literally like swanning in the Zoom call. The Jedi ruined my greatest work and it disappeared into the ether. Buddy, just sit down and drink your fucking overpriced wine. Like, I'm tired of listening to your ass. And I know that Hope is listening to this episode, and I want to personally apologize. I love Momin as a character. I do. I just find him as a person fucking insufferable. I hate him so much. I hate him so much. Anyway, I mentioned the Jedi a second ago. They do show up. We don't know anything about them, but they look cool.
Yeah, one looks like Legolas, and then the other one looks like Yondu from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, so let's talk about that, actually. So here's something really interesting about the visual design of these flashbacks. Like, these subtle visual choices that are made in these flashbacks. You identified Momin as, like, an elf boy. Everything in these flashbacks is meant to invoke an ethereal sense. It is meant to invoke a sense of otherness, a sense of what came before, of some history, some first age of the galaxy that we are only just getting a window into that is long dead and only the barest wisps of scraps remain. And the way they do this is by subtly putting like elf features into it. So Momin himself has the pointy ears. Additionally, there's a scene where he like mutilates a little creature in his jail cell. That creature kind of looks like a pixie from a distance. And then on top of that, the two Jedi, again, you've correctly identified, one of them looks a lot like Legolas.
And I guess if you want to go like in the other direction with that other character as kind of like a mohawk looking thing and a beard, I guess you could say he's more like a dwarf looking.
Right. They have like a Legolas and Gimli thing going on, sort of. And that's intentional, I think. It's meant to invoke this sense. We get some Mustafarians, which I think is rad. And then he puts the mask on a Mustafarian, which I think is great because like the entire Mustafar, it's amazing how they do this without even having movement on the page. That the Mustafarian like starts swanning about, just using their delicate fingers to just like sweep about like this evil like presence. And I love that the whole body language clearly changes because Momin's mask is on this thing now.
Right. Yeah. When he put it on this Mustafarian guy, I was like, oh, this is just what he's gonna be the rest of the time. He's just gonna be this kind of almost skinny, creepy looking, you know, kind of character. And it goes well. And I mean, obviously the next issue happens, but from just reading this, I was like, oh, they're gonna keep him like in this creepy kind of body because it looks good, like for, you know, what the character is.
Nope, they do something much more clever. We find out that the locus in the dark side apparently can function as a door to the dark side. We'll cover that in the next issue. But for now, that is mentioned. Apparently, and here's the thing I like, because this was set up back in the first arc. This was all the way back then when he went to this cave to bleed his kyber crystal.
He was like,
I sense weird things about the Force here. And Remember, he had all those like visions and stuff when he was in this cave. And he's like, no, this cave is such that you can physically open a door into the Force somehow. We don't dwell on this. My last note for this issue, Momin very specifically mentions like the idea of tuning to the Force here. So fun fact, I follow Pablo Hidalgo on Twitter, which if you don't, you should. He's rad. But he pointed out recently because there's an account that does Star Wars film shot by shot, and they're doing Rogue One, and he will quote tweet and give little facts about the shots. And he said, and I'd never realized this, that the design of the Temple of Kyber on Jeddah and the design of Vader's fortress on Mustafar are both meant to invoke tuning forks.
Oh.
Like, that's the idea.
That makes a lot of sense when you know what they're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
So, all the way back in Rogue One, they had designed it to look like a tuning fork, and now we have the canon story where, in fact, it operates as a tuning fork. Alrighty, issue number 23, Darth Vader and Darth Momin doing the world's most annoying construction project. As they continue to build and rebuild this fortress, Vader keeps murdering all of Momin's host bodies, so he keeps having to get new ones. It is all very funny. They get attacked by lava fleas. Vader manages to help fight them off. They do manage to build the Fortress Vader that we see in the Rogue One film. However, the Mustafarians attack during this, and Vader is called away after making Momin super special pinky promise not to pull any bullshit. Momin immediately pulls bullshit, opens the door to the Nether. Nope, I almost said a thing that was wrong, but we'll get to the why I almost said a thing that was wrong. He opens the door to the dark side, pulls his own body out, and puts the mask on to resurrect himself from the dead somehow. End of issue. So Vader continues to fuck the planet up. That's my first note.
I like that. I like how also they seed that the Mustafarians are like, oh, there's shit is happening to the planet. Like, it's clearly like what Vader is doing is disturbing the natural order or some kind of like the balance of the planet itself, like the geological balance of the planet, because like there's these like lava, I don't want to call them storms, but I think they do call them that in the, I can't remember if that's what they say another storm. Yeah, so there's lava storms, or there's like these weird weather things happening on the planet because Vader's fucking up.
It's worth remembering that the dark side is functionally imbalance. When you tap into your selfishness and your fear and your anger and your rage, to that extent, you are deliberately unbalancing yourself and you are deliberately unbalancing everyone around you. This is why Grey Jedi are bullshit. You can't have something that is half balance and half imbalance. It is either balanced or it is not. There is no real middle ground there. And so I think it's really interesting that you point out he's literally disrupting the balance of the planet as he taps into the dark side, because that's what the dark side is. It imbalances you and it imbalances everything around you, because when you are so focused inward on what you want, you don't care the effect that your actions are having on people around you. God damn, this is a good comic.
I also love just in general, like as a whole, like the constant like fail. Like, so it's like, oh, this design is perfect. This is going to be the one. And then literally it's like, no, just kidding. And then he literally gets a new body. And then whenever it's the next one, oh, he gets a new body. Oh, whenever it's the next one, he gets a new body. He's so mad every single time. He keeps murdering the moment. It's so funny.
Yeah. And if you're just listening to us, if you're not reading these comics, which I highly recommend you do, they're all on the Marvel Unlimited app. You can get it for $9.99 a month, not a promotion, but you can get literally 8 years of Star Wars comics. They were almost all published by Marvel. And if they were not published by IDW, they were published by Marvel. You can get all of them for $9.99 a month. You can get all of the everything up to 2020 runs, and you can get a whole bunch of the current runs that are about to finish out. But if you're not reading along with us, they're not just testing like designs, like prototypes. They are building the entire fortress,
right,
and testing it, and then having to scrap the fortress. It gets blown up every time it fails, and then Vader murders Momin's host body and transfers the mask over to a different one. At one point, he has like a lava flea.
Right? No, that is no. That okay. That part killed
That's
me.
That's the favorite. That's my favorite.
I was like, all the host bodies make sense, right? Like, oh, it's a stormtrooper. Oh, it's an imperial. Oh, it's another imperial. When it's the fucking lava flea. Why?
Because it's hilarious.
Sense.
And again, if you're reading on dynamic view, it literally, like, they're in the same position every time. Vader and the moment are in the same position. So it, like, cut to them standing. Moment's like, this time is going to be my best time. Zap. Destroy. Cut to them and moment in a new body. It's so fucking good. Funny. So fucking funny. I cannot stress enough how hilarious this issue is.
Like, and that's why I love it. It was genuinely comedy. Like, I thought it was hilarious. I mean, I know it's supposed to be serious, but it was just actually funny. Like,
it's so darkly funny. It's very apology accepted, Captain Nita. It's very like, this shouldn't be funny, but it's so funny when Vader does this shit. Anyway, pause, back up for just a minute before we get to the how many fucking iterations of this thing they have to build. So they're having a conversation sort of about what this place is and like that it's going to be a door to the dark side. And I need to correct myself and my own note, because in my notes, I refer to this place they're attempting to do the gateway to as the Netherworld of the Force. Now, the Netherworld of the Force first is mentioned in media in Revenge of the Sith. As far as I can find in canon media, it's only been mentioned a few places. We've never really seen it. It's in the High Republic. It's in the Rise of Skywalker expanded edition novel. It's sometimes referred to as the afterlife, but it's only sort of been mentioned. It was first conceived actually in a rough draft for Revenge of the Jedi. Return of the Jedi.
That's the old title, Charles.
It's the old title. In Legends, it popped up a handful of places, but we don't really know a lot about it. Nowhere seems to identify this as the Netherworld of the Force. So, correcting my own notes, this is apparently, at least as far as we know, something completely different. I don't know how the Force works, and frankly, it doesn't need those rules placed on it because that would make it boring, but this is apparently not that, somehow.
Maybe this is the Christian hell that Han Solo was talking about in Empire Strikes Back.
Oh, right, yeah. The Corellian hells is
Corellian hell, yeah.
Corellian hells. Ugh. I love how Star Wars will throw a line of dialogue in there, and then we have to have, like, a whole bunch of lore. Yep. To explain why they use this concept.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Jesus Christ, guys. Anyway, Bradley, did you know how many iterations of this castle they had to build?
I think the line is, there will be no 10th is the line.
Nine fucking iterations of this castle they have to build. Do you know how much fucking money that they wasted on this?
I also want to know, like, did this take place over the course of, like, months, or was this the course of years? Like, we don't know. Like, you know what I mean? Like, for all we know, this could have taken years.
Well, you have to imagine he's probably forcing them to build it around the clock.
That's true.
He can requisition whatever he wants because he's Darth Vader.
That's true.
If Darth Vader calls your Star Destroyer and is like, I need you to come down here, I'm using all of your people to build 9 versions of my fucking castle, what are you gonna do, say no to Darth Vader?
Right. Like, and I can see Palpatine going over, like, the numbers, being like, wait a minute, how many times?
Like, how many times? Wait, what is the budget for this?
Actually,
well,
we're gonna have to start taxing people a little bit more if we want to keep building this fortress.
Well, and that's the thing about empires too, is when you have empires with people who are vain, greedy, petty, deeply flawed people at the top of them, then yeah, they're gonna be able to get as much money as they want for their vanity project. And if they bankrupt the empire, that's their fucking problem. That's the people's fucking problem. It's not the emperor's fucking problem. The emperor's doing whatever the emperor wants. He's the emperor. Fuck those people that are paying taxes. Anyway, Momin betrays Vader, obviously, because Vader temporarily forgot that treachery was the way of the Sith and was like, now Momin, I'm gonna leave to deal with the lava people invasion, but I need you to extra super special promise that you're not gonna immediately betray me.
Right.
This motherfucker doesn't barely even get out the door before Momin betrays him.
Right. I also love how Momin kept, like, reiterating, he's like, oh yeah, I don't have the Force. I can't use the Force, and I'm just the mask. It doesn't matter what body I'm in. I just can't fucking use the Force. And then it's just like, all of a sudden, no, I can open up this gateway and just explodes everything. Like,
yeah,
no,
like, obviously he can. Like,
yeah.
Vader, buddy, we just had 23 comic issues, 22 right. and a half comic issues about how y'all are constantly screwing each other over. I don't know how to tell you.
I also love when he resurrects himself, he says, hello, me. And he's like talking to himself somehow. Like, it's like the body is talking to him, that he's possessing, but he's talking to himself from the beyond. Like, it's a weird, like, how are you doing both kind of thing. I don't know. It's just really hilarious.
It's so strange. And it feels like maybe the dark side, like, because he talks a lot about, like, oh, what's beyond the door is what you desire. Like, the dark side will give you, like, what you want. But you just have to kill a lot of people to do it.
Right.
And even then, it's going to be a twisted version because he gets the body. But then we see in the next issue, this does not go well for him. But I don't know. It's a little unclear, and I think deliberately so. But also, it does raise the age-old question of, you know, how would you respond to seeing another version of yourself? Or the gay people version of the question, would you fuck another version of yourself?
Right.
The eternal question that we are always asking. Don't lie to me if you're a gay person, or even if you're a straight person. Don't lie to me and say you have not at once attempted to seriously think about whether or not you would bang a clone of yourself.
I mean, thankfully, we've had this question answered in Loki.
I did not watch Loki season 2.
Well, no, I'm just joking about, like, the first season. Like, how, oh, yes. Like, yeah, he makes out with himself, essentially. So
I don't know if that happens, but we'll get to it when Marvelous Divas gets to it. I can't be bothered to watch the current Marvel output. When they get to it, I will watch this season.
Fair.
Issue number 24. Vader is like, well, shit, we have to deal with the Mustafarians that are attacking. The Mustafarians are like, let's just kill everybody, including our own people, with lava. Vader survives this because the movies have to happen, and manages to get himself out of the lava. He rushes back to Fortress Vader to confront Momin. They have a fight. Momin loses. He gets crushed by a large panel, and Vader kills him. Meanwhile, the Mustafarians are rushing up to attack Fortress Vader. They get super close, but Vader opens the dark side doorway, and the entire thing fucking blasts up. Vader enters the dark side doorway. End of issue.
Ooh, a little tease for the finale.
Ooh.
Before we do this issue, I want to point out something I noticed on the cover. I went back and looked at all the cover. I'm trying to go back and look at all the covers for every single issue we've done. I've noticed that the covers on the last two issues, so 23 and 24, it says rated T on these issues, and none of the other Darth Vader issues have rated T. Now, maybe I just have a different, like, cover.
I wonder if it's because back in issue 22, we literally saw that cat's guts on the ground. Like, there's gore in these issues.
Yeah, but, like, it's in 22 nasty. It doesn't say rated T, but then, like, it only shows up in 23. So I don't know if it's just, like, this cover is just a different, like, the one that I'm looking at just randomly has, like, a rated T, like, thing.
I don't know.
Second, yeah, it's so weird. Like, only these two issues, and then 25 doesn't have it. I just looked. So only 23 and 24 are rated T according to Marvel. So I don't know what the other ratings are, but I just thought that was weird.
All right, I'll go ahead and do this now since we've talked about covers twice. In no particular order, other people who have worked on the covers for the Darth Vader series so far are Jim Cheung, Matthew Wilson, Olivier Coipel, Giuseppe Cancoli, Francesco Mattina, and of course, Elia Bonetti, who co-did the covers for the current run that we're doing. Shout out to all those people. They did the various covers that we didn't talk about. My first note is just cool fight. There's a fight and it's cool.
It is what it is. It's Darth Vader doing his thing, you know? I mean,
he's doing his thing.
He's fighting off an army by himself pretty much. I mean, I love the stormtroopers though. They're like, they want it, like, they're getting into it. Like, there was one, I can't remember what it was. One of the stormtroopers said, like, get some or something. I thought it was so funny.
Yeah, they're like, for the Empire, charge, for Vader. And I'm like, oh, okay. No, I mean, this is neat. It's a neat fight. And the way it ends too, with the Mustafarians, like, sacrificing their own people just to take the Imperials out,
right,
which is really messed up, honestly. But we don't have a lot of time to dwell on it. I will say, it would have been very easy for Charles Soule to just paint the Mustafarians as, like, mindless, like, denizens of the planet who are just attacking to attack. I will say I did like that he did take the time to establish why they're attacking. They're not just attacking because Vader is doing his thing on their land, which, to be fair, is a justification in my mind to attack any Imperial forces. However, he does take the time to establish, like, no, he's unbalancing the planet. They are really trying, but they're concerned about their own survival because of what he's doing. And so they have elected to fight back. And frankly, I can't blame them for it. I found it interesting. So Vader propels himself out of the lava and he winds up, like, on the shore. He literally winds up back where he started.
Right. Yeah, he's still, I mean, and what's funny is he's still burning. The suit is saving him because he's wearing the suit. But it's just interesting that he went from, because, you know, fire is like his worst enemy. Like lava is right. his worst enemy. So it's like the fact that he saved himself from lava now.
Also that, like, numerous times throughout this, we see that he's like obsessing over when he got burned. Like, we had that section earlier where he was like daydreaming about whacking Obi-Wan with lava and jumping over him and burning Obi-Wan. Do you remember that section?
Yeah.
So Vader obsessively thinks about this. And when he's in a similar position where he's got lava closing in on him, we see him using the same skill that he used in the last arc in Burning Seas to get himself out of this. And he's back where he started, but he's not burned again. He actually did manage to do it. So I think that's a neat way of tying it back both to Revenge of the Sith and through the arc throughout the comic of Vader gradually becoming less Anakin, less of what he sees as Anakin's weakness and more Vader, which I think is very, very cool. Anyway, Vader and Momin have a fight, and here we go back to that previous scene that you had me mention where Momin saw into Vader's mind and knew what Vader wanted, which is to get Padme Amidala back, and he's been manipulating him the whole time and just playing on that because that's what the Sith. He also throws a little shade at Palpatine, which I thought was funny.
Right, talking about how empires don't last very long, and he's just
empires like... don't last long, and also whoever taught you this clearly was ignorant or lying to you.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is not how anything works, you dumb motherfucker. I will say, I strongly dislike Momin as a human person. Him shitting on Vader constantly in this issue, so funny to me. So funny. I do also find it interesting that, I'm gonna say this, and pun fully intended, the mask is off with Momin here when he's talking. Good not pun. Even a laugh.
Good pun.
Okay. The mask is off here when he's talking about, like, everything he says is inherently selfish. He's so self-centered. He really thinks he's the Force's special little boy. Like, he really thinks it wants me. It wants me to create. It wants me to do things. I'm Daddy's favorite. He's so exhausting. But he's also such a good character because it's that inherent selfishness, that inherent belief, I think, that he as an artist is more special than everyone else. He has something to do that only he can do because the Force has given him these gifts. I'm doing all sorts of fun little voices while I'm mocking Momin this episode.
Oh, I thought that was just your regular voice.
That is not my regular voice.
The voice that you're using now is your just fake podcast voice. The one you just did for Momin, that was your, that's your regular voice. So the Dark Side Divas really need to update their impression of you because that's his actual voice.
This is my actual voice that I sound like.
Yep.
No, I'm going to say they're pretty spot on with their high-pitched nasally version of me. It's pretty fantastic. Not going to lie on that. No, Momin sucks. And he does get fucking murdered again by Vader. He gets crushed and his neck snapped. And the mask is now going away. It is no longer talking to Vader, apparently. I think we will see it again in issue 25, but mostly it's going to go away and it'll be back in Lando. And also kind of in one of the Crimson Dawn comics. It's complicated. We don't have time to get into it. Anyway, Vader's like, I'm going to open the door. He opens the door and steps through, and that's the end of the issue. And wow, what a way to go into the finale.
Yeah, such a great... like just tease to the end. Like, clearly it's all been building up to this was such a good little arc. Like, I don't know, I think they really knocked it out of the park.
He's going in, he's gonna get Padme back. Everything that he's done throughout Revenge of the Sith and through the 24 issues, everything he's done has been for the purpose of getting Padme Amidala back,
right?
It's bringing her back. He desperately needs to do this. He desperately needs to make it all mean something. He desperately needs to save his wife. More particularly, he needs to have his wife back.
Right.
Because it's all about him. It's all about his feelings and his pain and his loss at losing her. So he's going to go, even though we've seen with the Momin thing that it's not super cool to bring people back from the dead. It doesn't go well, but he's going to try it anyway because he really like needs to do this. Man, Vader kind of sucks too.
Well, I mean, he's selfish, obviously. So it's he just is. Like, you know.
Anyway, do you have any final thoughts on issues 22, 23, and 24?
Yeah, I mean, really just it's pretty simple. simple. It really was such a good arc. Like, I think this was their strongest yet. This was, I mean, I'll look at it more as like a semi-whole arc too. Like, I feel like the Fortress Vader is like, they did just such a good job of establishing all this stuff and setting it up from the beginning and then making it make sense in the end. I'm really feeling this story. I feel like they really did a good job. I like it. I love that the way we've covered it, that I think breaking it up into 3, 3, and 1, it actually works really well somehow. Like, these last three that we just did worked well as a Momin mini arc. Like, they're kind of its own thing. Like, it's really fascinating how it worked like that. But yeah, I think that, you know, Charles Soule did a good job with this one. He really impressed me.
I flash back to the Rule of Five. Now, I know we talked about how the Rule of Five was kind of crunched down, we think, maybe to make more room for this particular arc, which, if that was the case, absolutely worth it. But I'm thinking about the Room of Masks scene. Do you remember the Room of Masks scene from Rule of Five?
Now that you bring it up, I remember it. Yeah, it's like the mask club.
Mask motifs are so prevalent throughout this entire series. We've seen Momin's mask pop up a couple of times. Vader's mask is a thing. And then also, we had the Room of Masks in the Rule of Five. And the idea that when you wear a mask... So I play a lot of Dragon Age, right? It's kind of the thing I talk about the most besides Star Wars. And in Orlesian culture specifically, they wear... A lot of the upper crust nobility will wear masks. They will, particularly to masked balls. And the idea, and I think it's what they're going for with the Room of Masks, and I think it's also what they're going for with Momin, and when he puts the mask on and how he becomes increasingly more unhinged as he's wearing this mask. Masks, rather than hide who you really are, that anonymity lets you be who you really are. And the idea is, in Orlesian society, when you're playing the great game, wearing a mask frees you up, even though we know who's under the mask. It frees you up to be a more authentic version of yourself when you have that anonymity. And I think Momin being increasingly shittier as he goes along, as he puts the mask on, and just the whole motif of him wearing the mask, Vader wearing the mask, the people in the Room of Masks wearing the mask. I think it's so interesting to look at his arc and how he's portrayed over these three issues, where we get, as you said, the sort of Momin mini arc for this. So that's sort of my final thought, is tying it all together with the masks. I love, Bradley, don't you just love when they have a Star Wars story that has a coherent beginning, middle, and end with themes that run through the entire thing and all tie up by the finale?
I mean, if only we could always get that.
If only we could always get that. Christ. Okay. Where we are going for the rest of the year. Here is the plan. Next week, we are going to be finishing Darth Vader 2017. We're going to be doing issue number 25, and we're going to be doing some discussion on the overall series. After that, one of two things is going to happen. I have ordered Bradley to take the last 2 weeks of the year off. That was an order passed down from me to him. He said, as equal co-producers on the podcast. But one of two things is going to happen. Either we're going to take 2 weeks off as a podcast in order to celebrate the holidays, and I'm working on a half a dozen other things, or I'll record something on the 18th to finish out the year. That might happen. Either way, the 25th, we're definitely taking off. We will be back in the new year, literally on January 1st, with Ahsoka. Yeah, we're finally doing it.
We're doing it.
Pluggables for Light and Dice's second season has started. We are well into it, so please go and listen to that if you are not listening to it already. I will also mention this next week, but keep an eye. You notice we mentioned the Dark Side Divas, our friends over there. Keep an eye, if you are their patron, for a special thing involving some stuff that's coming up that I may or may not be involved with. Bradley, what show should people be watching on Peacock and Bravo lately? It's Married to Medicine, right? Married to Medicine season 10. You could also just watch Temptation Island and Queen's Court. See, I remember.
You could also watch those There Was No Birth on Peacock too. So there you go. Yeah, you can watch all the things that I did this year.
This episode not sponsored by Peacock. I don't actually think you should get it unless you super like trashy reality shows. Alrighty, I almost said roll credits. Fuck me. Oh God. God, you've got that in my brain now. You've got that in my brain. Roll credits. I fucking hate CinemaSins. I detest those people. I think they're a blight on film criticism, but now you have put that in my head. Fuck you, Bradley. Run the socials.
Thank you for listening to Gold Squadron Gaze. Did Charles fuck something up? Send us a message at goldsquadrongaze@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at Gold Squad Gaze. Follow us on Instagram and TikTok at Gold Squadron Gaze. Subscribe to us on YouTube at Gold Squadron Gaze, where we post the podcast as well as exclusive content. Please join us next week and every week for more of Gold Squadron Gaze.
You ever see those LA like tourist trap photos where they're in that like bank of streetlights? You ever seen these?
Yes.
Okay, same guy.
He did
the guy that mutilated himself on television for shock value made that art installation.
Interesting.
Yeah, fun fact of the day. That might be our end clip unless we say something particularly vile.